Welcome to Outside the Pages. I am Poet Air. Joined with me, as always, is Chaz Simons and Synesthetic. We are the podcast where we deep dive into creators' careers. And right now we're talking about Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, which is more fun than a family in a farm, I can tell you that. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great, especially after revisiting such an incredible run.
Yeah, I read this whole thing. We were going to do like 6 to 12 issues, and I read all 22. I thought it was 24, and I was like devastated when I ran out, but this is...
I only read 13 because I've been busy as shit with the new album drop.
So. Oh, it's understandable. There was no necessity to read the whole series, but...
Well, I just want to. I'm going to go finish that movie.
It's the same thing that happened with Invincible Iron Man last week. Like, we just read a small chunk of it, but we're so entranced. And that's the true power of Fraction. Like, I think he does decompression better than Bendis.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I want to throw out there now is I've noticed about Fraction's body of work so far. He kills it with the cameos, crossovers. They're all over the place. I don't know how he's such a wizard at getting that through at the companies, but he nails it. It's super great to see them all together.
And yeah, the cameos in this are nuts and funny, and this book...
And awesome.
...is like...
It's so funny, I actually had to screenshot a bunch of the jokes.
Yeah, I did the same. I screenshotted so many parts of this story, and it's such a nice, funny, comedic, and yet noir book, too. I feel like... Matt learned a lot working with Ed Brubaker and kind of pushed it into his, like, his writing ability as well as au revoir. How would you call it? I forget what you call that word. The
au revoir. Au revoir. Yeah.
Au revoir. Yeah, of his, his writing talent because...
Yeah.
Because, like, this... I'm just on a crime kick recently on, like, my personal reading, and so, like, Hawkeye fit right in with these crime books I'm reading right now, even though it's not a crime book per se.
Pun not intended, this reminded me of a gritty noir-style Archer.
Yeah.
That's fair.
This is,
The comedy was super Archer-esque, and I love Archer, I should say.
You're going to love this last books we're doing with Fraction Jack, because this humor definitely
stays. I can't
wait
for Sex Criminals.
And Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, yeah.
Is the same
type
of humor.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Olsen, I've heard, is fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's very similar to this series. But first, we're going to do some comic news. And speaking of cameos, I was looking for news to bring up to you guys. And I think the craziest news, there's this Marvel guy who's been spoiling stuff pretty, like, spot on Reddit since, like, the end of Endgame. So you spoil...
A reliable spoiler.
Yeah, he spoiled Black Widow, like, I don't know, 2 years ago about Taskmaster. And he's been...
Wow.
He dropped, like, a huge spoiler thread, which had WandaVision's plot in it and Loki's plot in it. And He also, which is, this one I don't know about, but he does claim in that spoiler post, it's like, I don't know, 9 months old, that he claimed that Eric Killmonger is going to replace Chadwick Boseman in Black Panther 2, which I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I was just talking to Alex about
I feel like in desperate situations, Disney could do something crazy like that because he's best friends with the director. Michael B. Jordan's best friends with the director of Black Panther. So, and he's been his good luck charm so far. So I feel like put in a situation because of tragedy, maybe they could be like, let's do this. I mean, they could always explain Eric Killmonger living by being like revived in those healing gardens things they have. Or that he didn't... Do we see him die or just pass out?
I mean, I feel like, he stabs himself in the heart and then falls off a thing, right? Doesn't he fall into the ocean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he falls up.
As long as he didn't actually die.
Well,
oh shit!
I was gonna say.
I just thought about
Marvel
it.
Marvel kills villains left, right, and center.
Did he fall off in water?
And then they come back.
He might not.
He fall in the water.
I don't actually recall.
But if he did
sure.
fall in the water, I could think of what they're gonna do. He falls into water. The Atlanteans get him. He's revived by Namor and the people. They attack Wakanda. He escapes. Defends Wakanda.
That'd be sick.
And becomes Black Panther.
I would watch Atlantis versus.
That's what
Wakanda.
The movie is.
I'm watching it right now. I'm watching this death
scene.
Oh,
sick.
He's looking out over all he can see. It's a real, like, you know, everything the light touches scene.
Is there water?
There is not. He is on a cliff. It looks like above something.
This is thrilling right now.
Oh, he was stabbed. He removes the spear. So I think that would kill him. I think the blood loss is like too fast.
So
isn't there a magical well of reviving or something in
Wakanda?
There's
like those stones in that garden that you could like wrap people in, remember? That's how they bring Black Panther back.
Here's what's up.
Oh, true. So they could pick him up and wrap him and be Chaz, like, "Hey, this is your chance at redemption."
All right. So yeah, he just stabbed himself. He got stabbed, right? The big fight, climactic, shwap, got him right in the heart. Now, they could have taken him from that moment and said, "We can heal you," right? Leave it in, right, to stop the bleeding. And he says, "No," right? Death over bondage. I'm not going to be put away for my crimes. And I know that that's what y'all are going to do. So after he pulls the spear out, he collapses. Black Panther then stands up very slowly. I think if there was hope of reviving him or saving him in some way, and even if T'Challa thought that there was redemption in his path, he would have rushed somebody or something. He would have picked that dude up and like firemen carried him down to that place. We would have seen him say, "I'm not going to lose another Wakandan because of outside forces." Right? Like,
yeah.
And I think the idea at the end of them expanding outward and being the force for good in the world that they should have been in the same vein as Killmonger, but in a different in a contrasting style, right? Instead of providing them the weapons they need to fight the people that are oppressing them, giving them the tools they need to thrive and rise above the people oppressing them is like a continuation of his dream that would make me think he's dead.
I would think he's dead too, but so this guy has been like hot on stuff. He pretty much described the trailer of Spider-Man that came out this week where we're going to see Doc Ock. And then we're going to see the pumpkin bomb. But the news, that's not even the news he dropped this week. This week he dropped news that Xavier is going to be in Multiverse of Madness and have an extended battle with Wanda, Scarlet Witch. Now, I don't know what Xavier this is, which is my question. You can look on Reddit. People have been talking about this for all week. And then he's also talking a lot about Daredevil and how Matt Murdock's going to be back. I don't know if Matt Murdock's going to be back in Spider-Man or he's just going to be in the Echo TV show. He's more saying that Daredevil and all those characters, Daredevil and Wilson Fisk and Bullseye, are all going to be in the Echo TV show that's coming out on Disney Plus. Not Spider-Man No Way Home, which I know some people.
I mean, they kind of should. Echo's a big, like,
Daredevil character.
Right. So yeah, it tracks there, but I don't know. That
Xavier, it has to be new Xavier, right?
What if it's brand
McAvoy?
New?
I would think it would be a brand new, right?
I think brand
new. Or are they really just going to throw McAvoy in to be like, "I'm from the multiverse. I'll stop you." We just lost two British listeners for sure with my McAvoy.
Or we gained three because they were so convinced. They were like, "Finally, a Brit on this podcast."
So what do you guys think of this guy's rumors? He's been hot in the past. Do you think it's just a bunch of craziness he's just throwing out there now because he got some things right? Or do you think he works for Marvel? My friend here thinks this guy definitely works for Marvel and is leaking information because
I'm sure he does. If all this,
everything so far has been true except the Killmonger thing sounds suspicious. The Xavier thing, probably, if it is true, is I think I agree with Chaz that it's going to be a brand new actor, whoever they've decided.
As long as they don't Star Wars Chadwick Boseman in,
I kind of think if it's Xavier, I think people were wrong. I'm going to throw this out there right now. I'm going to call it. If it is Xavier, I'm going to throw this out here and call it now because Dan Stevens has been meeting with Marvel for like a year and Multiverse of Madness is what's filming now, that people thought he was auditioning for Magneto, that he's actually the new Professor X, which would then be kind of funny and tie into the FX universe because he played Xavier's son, David Haller. And I could see a bald Dan Stevens kind of looking like Xavier.
I could. What I think I need is like somebody, and I'm sure maybe somebody's already done this on Reddit, but I need somebody to compile all of the leaks that this guy has had, or this person, I should say, because the internet is a wild place. They could be anything. But I need like a data table, basically, of confirmed and wrong. Like what they got right and what they got wrong. Because a lot of times we get that confirmation bias of like 9 out of 10, they got right, but 1 they got wrong. And then the next time they might get like 6 wrong, but we're so like held up on like, "I can't believe they were right," right? Because when you said Dr. Octopus and Pumpkin Bomb, in my mind I thought well, this guy's just like a cold reader psychic. This is like a John Edwards for comic geeks. He's just like, all right, what are they going to go nuts for?
Recently, is he said the last battle of No Way Home is going to take place in a Statue of Liberty with the Captain America shield, and then somebody this week leaked that they were filming on Spider-Man No Way Home, and they're at the Statue of Liberty with the Captain America shield. Those two are right. He was right about Richard E. Grant playing. I could try to tell you all the ones I know. He was right about Richard E. Grant playing Loki, older Loki. He was right about WandaVision and Pietro not really being Pietro and being a guy named Ralph Boner. He was right about that, which is weird, and that came way before they revealed that. He was right about Sam taking up the mantle of Captain America and getting a new costume.
We kind
of
saw that coming,
in the last episode. Yeah, we all saw that one coming, which we could have guessed. Those are the ones I know for sure he was right about. He was right about Wong and Abomination being in Shang-Chi before the trailer came out. So those are the ones I know this guy has been correct about. He's probably done a lot more that have not been right.
See?
And a
lot more that haven't come out yet. Yeah, see? So there's that idea of, like, does somebody in the audience, I'm getting a M from somebody in the audience.
Yes. Oh, me, I'm Michael.
Yeah,
I'm Michael,
okay.
That's me.
Yeah. You have an older male figure who passed, yeah? And it's like, wow.
Yeah, my grandfather.
How'd they know? Yeah.
How do you know that?
Yeah.
He taught me about great power and responsibility.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. Like, some of this time, sometimes when I hear somebody who's like, yeah, they've had it right in the past, I'm like, yeah, but some of these are like just informed guesses, right? Okay, Wong and the Abomination, I would have never guessed.
Never would have guessed that, yeah.
Because they're, in my mind, that...
I don't know how he guessed Ralph Boner, too. That's not... They mention
hilarious.
Ralph Boner, I think, in the first...
Yeah.
No, but they do mention him, too, I believe.
Yeah.
Just kind of call it to your credit. In the first episode or second episode, because he's What's-Her-Name's husband.
Yeah.
He's
Agatha's.
He's Agatha's husband, yeah. So he does get mentioned before. So, I mean, that's a crazy informed guess, though, to be like, he's actually Agatha's husband, but who knows?
Right. So... Yeah, I'm not saying that I'm not giving any credit to these leaks, because it does sound like they are correct.
He could be, like, a friend of someone in the industry who's overhearing things.
The real one to test is he said the end, one of the end credits of Shang-Chi, which I'm going to apologize now to our listeners if this is correct, that it's going to be Wong pulling Shang-Chi into the Sanctum of Sanctorum. Sanctum Sanctorum, and in Captain Marvel... And Doctor Strange and Wong are going to be there. And then they're going to ask him what the 10 rings are because they don't know what they're from. And then it's going to lead to them wanting to ask questions about Shang-Chi's mother's home because she's from another dimension in Shang-Chi, which I don't know if anyone knows about.
So we're going to get
Shang-Chi's mom.
Iron Fist. We're going to get, like, the mythical city is what you're saying.
Well, no, this isn't even a spoiler because people have reviewed the movie, but here's mom in the movie is from another dimension that his father, like, goes into that is like a Kunlun dimension. It's like basically like old mystical Chinese battles. It's supposed to be like, you know, kind of like the Jet Li hero movie, you know, everything looks really extravagant like that.
Yeah.
Fantastical.
Ang Lee style.
Yeah.
Hell
so
yeah.
Ang Lee style. Yeah. So that's like what her dimension's like. But apparently that's what he says the end credit reveal is that he gets pulled in with the Avengers, specifically Doctor Strange, Wong, and Captain Marvel. And then they're asking him where he got those rings from because they've never seen anything like it. Hinting that they want to know about that other dimension. If that's right, he'll have more credence with me, because that's something I don't think you could really just make up or guess. I would guess something like that.
I mean, you look at the layout of all the Marvel movies coming up, and while they have shifted, Captain Marvel 2 is somewhere around there, right?
Yeah, the Marvels is filming right now with Nia DaCosta, who's a great director, which is exciting.
Yeah.
He just dropped Candyman this week.
Yeah, so it would track to include them as the to include her in that, right? In that end credits, just as like a hey fans, hey audience, we got another movie coming.
we got another movie.
It's right
coming.
On the
and
horizon.
Guess what? She's gonna be with Kamala Khan. Here's another crazy just my own fan theory I'm throwing out there. Did Fantastic Four, the latest issue, get pushed back to September 1st because they weren't ready to reveal the cast for the movie yet?
I mean, that would be pretty cool. Because
they were supposed to celebrate the anniversary the last week of August, and they pushed the celebration back a week with no... I don't know if it was just John Romita Jr. Sorry, John Romita Jr., that I'm blaming it on your art. But
yeah, his art that doesn't seem like it should take a whole nother extra little bit to do.
Yeah.
Sorry, John Romita Jr. That... fans out there. I loved it when he drew Spider-Man and when he drew Goons and Kick-Ass, and that's about all I think he's good for.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man with J. Michael Straczynski. That's his best work, in my opinion, as well.
Yep.
He's crushing it in that book. That's all I have for MCU news. I did kind of want to bring up one of the Substacks we talked about recently just because I'm hooked on its newsletter, The Three Worlds, Three Moons, which is Jonathan Hickman's project. But it's not just Hickman. So Hickman is creating a whole universe, and he's doing it with a collective of writers and artists. The artists on the series are Mike Del Mundo and Mike Huddleston, which is exciting. And then he has Al Ewing has created the whole religious system, so he's created all the religions in this universe. Ram V has created all the currencies and all the economics for this universe. And then Tiny Howard has created all the magic systems in this universe and all the fantasy elements. So it sounds really cool. His is a little more expensive, which makes me... He did say that, I mean, his books are going to be monthly and they're going to be like 30 issues. I mean, 30 pages, not 30 issues. They're going to be 30-page issues once a month, though he still has no date of when the first issue is coming out. And I don't want to... I love Hickman and I love all these people. They're some of my favorite creators, but I know that sometimes the books take a while because they're doing so much in them. So, I mean, I probably would not invest until I knew that first issue was going to drop, like, in a few days. But then I would also probably unsubscribe when I waited for the next issue just in case it wasn't, you know, the
next
month.
Actually monthly? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he did do a Grant Morrison interview right now to get people to jump on, which is an exclusive interview. And he said Grant was his main inspiration as a writer. They hadn't talked, so he wanted to interview him, that he was the fanboy in the conversation. And I'm sure it's a really good interview, but I wasn't ready yet to pay $8 for the month or $80 for the year.
Right.
Until actual comics are coming. Because Three Worlds, Three Moons sounds incredible because they're literally creating their own concept universe, which, I mean, they want it to be like a DC or Marvel universe where it's going to have its own heroes, its own storylines. All these writers that help create all the systems are going to have their own stories in the world. And it's just Hickman really launching it, which I feel sounds really exciting. The first pages, which Del Mundo and Huddleston have shared, are incredible. And they're very cryptic. They're about like astronauts who have lived on this moon forever. There's a character called Father and another main character named Son. And that's like their names. And it looks almost like 1950s era home life mixed with like these exotic locales. So I'm really excited to see what comes of this. And I'm really excited to see Rom, Al, and Tiny putting their work in it. It's cool to know our friend of the show, Rom, is creating a whole economic system. That's really cool. And
shout out to Rom.
Yeah, Rom. Shout out to Rom. That is cool. And then also Al Ewing, you know. It's cool to see how close from Alex originally, how close Al Ewing is to White Noise. He's like their secret member that works for Marvel. Yeah. Slowly bringing them into Marvel.
Yeah, I'm super torn on the Substack stuff, man. Like, I'm not saying that it's not going to be worth it, because it probably is. You're right. Like, this whole universe, the way that it's built, the idea of them all working together, but just to tell stories within the cool lore that they're building, I love that. That sounds like everything I want. But I cannot see myself... $80, man. That's rough.
And reading digital is so different for me. Like, when I read a physical comic, I'm physically enthralled. Like, I love that Texas Blood. I read it digital. I bought a physical, and it was such a better experience. Like, physical is just, for me, it's a completely different experience. Like, even Hawkeye, which I just read all digital, was amazing. If I would have had the omnibus, it would have been an even better experience. It's just so much... Something about physically holding a book and being able to go into that world is just a huge part of it for me.
I got them 3 hardcovers. Because I forgot to buy the omnibus when it was cheap. And so now I don't want to pay for it. So I just got I had the first hardcover.
You don't want to pay $300 to $400
no,
for the
no,
omnibus?
I don't.
No, neither do I. Yeah, and now it doesn't look like they're going to re-release it, since they're re-releasing that in a couple months. They're re-releasing that Soft Boy. And that's the omnibus. I think they released in November for the show, which is coming out. But do you guys have anything else you want to add on Substack and 303 Moons? Or as Chaz said, should we take aim?
I think we should take aim. Fire at Hawkeye.
This looks bad. God, I love this book so much.
God, every issue. So good. Even if it looks so bad.
This is the best. I don't want to shout out who it is. One of our good friends does not like this writer, this lovely person, Matt Fraction, that we love covering and seeing his expansion. He's not a big fan. He only liked one of his books recently. And then I read this and I'm just like, how do you not love this? This is, for me, one of the best Marvel works. I know that's saying a lot, but for me, I've always enjoyed Clint Barton. I was that weird kid that thought Clint Barton was the coolest Avenger on Kurt Busiek and George Perez's run, because he was always kind of talking back to Captain America and doing his own thing. And I loved Hawkeye when he went to the Thunderbolts. Like, from age 11 to 15, Hawkeye, I would have told you, was my favorite comic book character. And now I know why. I didn't realize until 2012, well, every kid in my school that read comics looked at me like I was a crazy person. And I was like, Hawkeye! And then in Avengers, the movie came out, and I went, oh, wait, he just has a bow and arrow, and all these people have insane powers.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt uses that in such a great way for the narrative of this story.
I think he does have a power, though. His power is resilience, I would say. He is somebody who is relentlessly picking himself back up, dusting himself off, putting on a bandage or two, and then throwing himself right back into the fryer.
Yeah, he can just take relentless beatings, fucking stabbing through his literal ears, which I feel like that would kill most people. And he's just ready and up to go. Same with his brother Barney, who we'll get more into. But Barney's a fucking savage too, taking wounds that I'm almost certain would kill me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's pretty brutal.
I think it's brilliant that he's the only Avenger that doesn't have a superpower. And that's why he's so good. Because you can look at superpowered people all day, and it's not relatable.
Yeah,
it's true.
This is relatable. People love superheroes because everyone wants a superpower. We all want to feel
safe.
It's
wish fulfillment.
There's someone out there protecting us. Yeah, but I really like relatable comics, and so that's what I really like about Hawkeye.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like Batman, Iron Man, they don't have powers, but they have billions of dollars. So I can't relate to that. But Hawkeye, he's just a regular.
Hey, Hawkeye
dude.
Has a lot of stolen money too.
He was. Yeah.
Are you saying that Iron Man and Bruce Wayne stole their fortunes?
No.
Well, yeah. Out of the mouths
of
the poor.
Yeah, that's
how
I was
going to
say. Something along those lines. Yeah, definitely meets the criteria.
Are you saying Iron Man and Batman are Republican wet dreams?
Beat up poor dudes selling dimes.
I'm saying they certainly benefit from some sort of cool tax law that I do not have access to at my current level of zero income.
Not to mention that, I mean, haven't we seen in the series that their businesses have done all sorts of sketchy shit.
Wait, Batman and Iron Man?
Including
Iron Man?
I mean, occasionally I think there is a rogue element that does something, but I feel like the books are usually quick to show their moral capacity for shutting things down.
Not them, but the people they inherited
from.
It's the family
there is,
has blood.
There is a lot of times where they look back.
Stark Tech literally is all blood.
No, that's very true.
So they come from old money, but it's, you know, made from fucking people over and killing
Clint's
people.
All about new money that's made from fucking people over.
Yeah. Clint is about fucking people over face-to-face instead of behind their back and making money off of
them. Almost unintentionally face-to-face, though. I feel like he really would prefer it behind their backs, but
unless it's his family.
So,
and then
There is one thing I really want to address about this book, and I like to call it the Hawkeye effect. And Michael, I think you'll be pretty familiar about this, but it felt like this book came out and was just such a critical darling. Like, not only is it good, not only does it look good and read good and really reinvigorates a character that for a long time I think you and 12 others were fans of. And that I say that with love, because I know there are characters that I love that nobody gives a shit about.
And now
he's
in the MCU.
So this is where people really started to look at him and say, like, wow, he is cool. And I feel like you were probably like, get off the bandwagon. This is ours.
Yeah.
But this book really changed a lot of what was coming out, I think, for mainstream comics for a minute. Like, we got a lot of, I'm going to affectionately refer to them as knockoff versions of this book. Books about characters, those like ne'er-do-wells that are like, they're really trying, and then they have like kind of that indie art style. They got the like I said, the decompression story that isn't always executed as masterfully as it is here. But I think there's something to be said that this is almost on that level for me as far as changing how stories were told for a period of time, as like Dark Knight Returns, right? We had Dark Knight Returns, and it got all super dark and gritty for a lot longer than we had Hawkeye light and fun, but still sometimes we'll handle some emotional stuff. So, it's one of those books that, like, I can't ever believe a book about Hawkeye made people change how they wrote their books about like characters that weren't Hawkeye. It's
yeah, from 2012 to 2016, so many books, mm-hmm. like for 4 years. And even me, like aspiring writer, I just realized rereading it this week that my Wonder Man pitch is pretty much just rip off of how this story works.
It works, so though, like, you know?
Yeah,
it's a like, good idea.
I thought I was original with this idea. No, I've just read Hawkeye a bunch.
Yeah.
But...
Well, all ideas come from our subconscious based off what we've seen in reality.
Yeah.
Quote, unquote.
To get, like, a quick, like, just an analysis story, this is about a down-on-his-luck Clint Barton who's living in an apartment building in Bedford, so he's in Brooklyn, New York, and it's run by Tracksuit Dracula. Okay, here's a question I'm going to throw you guys real quick. I know Kaz, who's our hitman, and like one of the main villains of the series is Polish. I know because I'm a Polish person, and his name, and he's constantly cursing in Polish. Are the Tracksuit Mafia guys Polish or Russian? Or are they Russian and they hired him, or are they all Polish?
I like to think that they are Russian, right? That's the easiest. I've seen a lot of people here in Vegas. Well, okay, I take that back. For a period of time, I would go to the gym late at night, and there would be Russian guys in tracksuits. Not working out necessarily, so I don't know what they were doing.
Oh, but
whatever, right? To each their own. Sure.
Selling steroids.
So I like to think that they're Russian, but I feel like it's addressed nondescriptly in this because they didn't want to anger anybody who thought, like, well, that's not all Russians. So
yeah, it's intentionally vague, and then when he's naming them off, the main Russian goon, when he's naming off his soldiers, they are very nondescript. Like, some names are clearly Russian, some are clearly Polish.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
It's probably a fusion. I mean, yeah. Do Russians only exclusively take Russians? I know the Mafia does that.
No, and Kaz could have got taken by Russians because Russia's constantly invading Poland. So, like, that backstory we get with Kaz by the amazing Francisco Francavilla, where he's doing his backstory and he's escaping from Poland and, like, his whole family dying, he gets taken by Russians. That could have very well been when Russia was invading Poland, and then they kind of took Kaz and kind of raised him after he had all this tragedy, all the tragedy he had in Poland. But so he and Clint Barton, I'm only going to get into this so we get into the main story. So Clint Barton ends up basically purchasing this apartment building so that he could protect all of his residents who he has made a close community with. All of these characters are lovely. They all have moments to shine too in this because everybody gets to kind of fight and defend their apartment building. And the main core of this story is Clint Barton against these mobsters who want to have this building demolished so they could put in a new shopping mall, basically. And they're trying to scare everyone out by raising rent and also terrorizing them. And Clint basically buys it. He's their interim owner, and he's defending all of his tenants from these Russian mobsters. And, of course, Kate Bishop is there, and it really, really has a lot to do with their relationship and also relationship just with women.
Oh, I love their relationship.
Yeah, because Clint is kind of a man whore, and you get to see his relationship with all the women he's been with, all of his girlfriends,
great,
his ex-wife.
Great couple issues.
He's doing it, we should mention, to avoid intimacy.
He is doing it to avoid intimacy, yeah. He was in a relationship with Jessica Drew on The Avengers during this time. This is right after he stopped being Ronin and started being Hawkeye again, so she's in it a lot as well, who he kind of has the most affectionate feelings towards. And then also we get, like, we'll get into it more in the end. I'm just trying to do the outlay of the story. Is later on we actually get a story with Kate when she goes to L.A. And every issue is either Clint or Kate, which I really enjoy, and I can't wait to talk about that. But that's just the main outline of the issues that we're covering in this whole Matt Fraction, David Aja, Francisco Francavilla, Annie Wu, and Matt Hollingsworth story that we're talking about.
We also get Javier Pulido and Steve Lieber.
Oh, yeah, we do get Javier Pulido. Steve Lieber as well. Lieber crushing it, too. The guest artists in this are great.
And every time I was really expecting not to like the guest artists, right? Because David's got such a style. Like, this book slaps. This is the thing about Hawkeye as a whole, I think. I never realized how long I was reading the issue because I enjoyed the experience of reading the issue. The layout of the panels, the way that they're posed, the motion that the book carries without having literally, like, I mean, there's probably a handful of motion lines throughout, but there's just this sense of movement and, like, everything to it that's so, like, fucking smooth. Like, it's frustrating because other books don't look like this. So anytime a guest artist came in, I was like, ah, great. It's not going to look good. But it always served whatever story it was telling. And it fit the narrative sometimes better than I think it would have been with anybody else.
I agree.
It's actually, it was surprising how fast of a read these are for how good they are. Like, I didn't feel disappointed that they went fast because they were so enjoyable. But I was able to read each issue in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Right. It's just a like kinetic ride. Yeah. Visually, Aja's David Aja, I'm just going to call him, or David Aja. He's definitely one of my favorite artists, and I definitely fell in love with him from this Hawkeye run. Like, it was great seeing him in Iron Fist, but his art in this is perfect.
Oh,
like, all I want is a gritty crime story from David Aja. And, like, this year he had Seeds, which is incredible, what he did with Innocenti, which is definitely maybe going to be in my top books of the year, but that's all black and white. And just seeing him kind of evolve from this style on, so much is, like what Chaz is saying with motion, so much of this is just visual. It really brings you down to the characters, and each character's, you know, details are done so well. Clint's facial expressions. I love how when any of the women in Clint's life are upset, the way they're looking at him almost with a blank smile because they're just know the shit he's up to. And just the way the action's done is just, it's just brilliant. Yeah. And
I liked how clear it was with the way Kate looked and acted that she wouldn't say anything, but it was like beating her up inside. And like, he was, even though he's like a good guy, he was hurting the people around him.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I want to talk too about the paneling. The way that David tells the story with Matt is so effective, in that sometimes there's a scene in particular, I think it's like issue 3. It's super early on, but they're at that party with all of the evil villains. It's the circus of crime. Yeah. And as they're making their way through, casual, or whatever, the paneling gives us that hyper-focus boxed in on just them two, as they move through one larger panel, which I think is just it's an insanely effective way of showing them walking without having beep, 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 breaking up everything. But also, there's so many times where the scene will transition between two moments in time, but it'll be the same expression. I think it's actually mostly in the very first issue, where he'll go from where he was with his face just looking like all beat up and crazy, like looking down, and then it'll cut to earlier that day from that same position of his face and everything. So it's just like, there's just something about the way that the scenes feel like they transition so fluidly. And then there are some other ones where, like,
definitely
when he does the villains all like, it's the tracksuit Draculas with their main Vlad right there in the center.
Yeah.
Where it's all black and he's just white. Everything's like just super contrasted black and white. So you just get the idea, the scale of this army of tracksuit Draculas and the singular figure in control of all of them. And it's insane.
It is insane, and definitely the story, like, it jumps around a lot, and all these, the way he transitions, it definitely helps it, because, like, you'll get some stories way before they actually take place in the timeline, and they come back, and kind of nearer the end, they're all, like, puzzle pieces falling together, but it never, the way the art's done, the way Matt's telling the stories, it never distracts from it, and it's honestly almost not noticeable at all.
No, it's, like I said, it's just such a smooth transition between two similar, sometimes even just the same image. That snaps you into that next thing. It's incredible, man. Yeah. It's wild that it felt like three Marvel titles in a row that this guy's on, and they all are like I said, I think on Iron Man and I said on Iron Fist, this is where I started to care about Hawkeye, because this story, like Jack said, makes him human, makes him real relatable. Like, he's got a lot of skills, but that don't mean he doesn't have his problems. And also, the neighbors are great. And so is Lucky the pizza dog. Gotta love Lucky.
Lucky the pizza dog is great. And that's such a perfect first issue.
It reminds me of that episode of Futurama that makes you
Thanks. Now I'm tearing up right now. Thanks a lot.
Now you guys can cry. Yeah.
It's almost as bad as that, you know, Futurama episode with his brother. That really makes me want to cry every time.
Yeah.
Oh, that one's bad too. Yeah. Shout out to Futurama for being like the best fucking show ever. I like it better than even Rick and Morty as far as sci-fi cartoons go.
Easy. It's definitely a classic. Yeah. Yeah, like the time jumps for me, just the way, like you said, the transition's so smooth. And honestly, like, I forget every time that nothing in this book is sequential. So, like, we're jumping around from page one all the way to the end. I mean, there's stuff in the last five issues that we see in the first six issues.
Yep.
Which you don't even realize until the last five issues that you're back in the same place again. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But also in a good way, being like, oh, this story, this is how it's being told. Is not being told all at once. And it just makes it surprising, engaging, and just so original. I don't think there'll ever be a Hawkeye series this good again. I think Matt would have to come back and write Hawkeye again, which I think, as he said at the end of the 22 issues, that was kind of the story he wanted to tell, which is great.
Yeah. Matt Rosenberg it'd be great. Was close. I think he's the closest to this feeling that I've ever had.
Yeah, the all-new, all-different Hawkeye, or whatever it's called right afterwards, which really kind of annoyed me when I was originally reading it, because it was clearly a 12-issue series that they split up into two six-issue series. Do you remember they were doing that with the all-new, all-different series that they do? Like, remember they did two with Captain America? They did one six-issue run, and they'd renumber it after six issues and do another six issues, and I was kind of like, what are you doing, Marvel? I mean, you're just trying to get two number one monies. I blame
that on what event was going on then? Secret Wars? I think Secret Wars ran late, and they had to put out what they had so far. But then Secret Wars ended, and everything was supposed to be different, so they had to end everything again and restart it.
Yeah, that is exactly, even though it didn't change at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, with Lemire's Hawkeye, all they did was make this story with them 20... most jarring thing ever, which I will complain about. It's a different run, but it's the run it's the run right after this one, following this one, not preceding it, is that on the sixth, but technically first issue of Hawkeye, where after Secret Wars, they have to change it, and it's, you know, Clint and Kate, they're dealing with a problem that they have, and then it says it goes 20 years in the future. So it's old Clint, it's old Kate, they go to fight the Mandarin. The next issue, it says 30 years in the future, and it just keeps saying 30 years in the future. But the whole first issue, it says 20 years in the future the entire time. It bugged me to this day that happened. What kind of fucking mistake is that? That no editor
Clint had dementia, so he thought it was 20 years the first time, and then was like, oh no, 30 years. Definitely 30 years.
I mean, what editing mistake is that? Was it that they read it and were like, 20 years doesn't seem reasonable enough, so change it to 30? They won't notice? Is that what they thought?
Probably.
Maybe.
It's weird. That whole run's weird. It starts out really strong, actually. Yeah. And like everything kind of goes downhill. Like the first few issues where it's about Clint and Barney as children, and it's got that awesome...
Ramon Perez
art, yeah. But even Perez's art isn't as good in the second half, where I feel like I think him and Lemire are pissed off by that point.
I would imagine so.
Can I say my favorite character besides Hawkeye and Kate is...
Yeah.
Grills.
You can.
Grills is great.
Because I was definitely going
to
bring
really
about...
You're really trying to make us cry today,
Jack.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Trying to make us cry.
Yep.
I forget.
Broke my
Grills,
goddamn heart.
Yeah, the Hurricane Sandy issue is always great, where he goes and helps Grills save his dad and finds out his name is Gil. Grills is the guy that lives at his building, and he always cooks sausages up on the rooftop at their little community parties. One of the many residents Clint gets close in his life, and... He gets savagely taken by Kaz, which I always forget about. Every time I've read this run, I forget that Grills dies. Mm-hmm. And then every time I'm punched in the stomach, like,
sorry for the spoiler, guys.
It's an older run. I don't know that it's gonna make anybody sad.
I don't feel bad spoiling a 9-year old.
I feel like
run,
anyone listening to this.
Now, if in case somebody picks it up so that they because
That's
of
fair.
Us,
yeah.
Sorry for the spoiler.
Yeah.
We're not going to hold back on spoilers.
This book is brutal. Also, real quick, last time on Lemire's run, he does a bunch of deaths at the end of this book.
That's true.
A vital part of this series dies at the end, and it's completely heartbreaking. And then they're just alive in Lemire's run, which is never explained. It's just like magic.
That's the power of the Molecule Man. Or, no, Molecule Man.
Molecule Man.
No, Grills... Grills got me bad, man. That one really messed me up. And then it was worse because it feels like the intro pages are so great. There's always the recap page in a Marvel comic where it tells you like what's been going on, and every single one of these is basically almost like Next Wave, where it's just a joke. Like, it's just,
yeah,
this is what we're doing. Why are you still reading this? It's redundant at this point. And then after the thing with Grylls, it says, oh yeah, Grylls just died. Did you forget? Or whatever. Or we just killed Grylls. Aren't you mad? And it's like, yeah, I'm mad. I'm real mad about that. Thanks a lot.
Ugh. And they do hilarious names for their editors and people that work on the book with them. Like Wacky Stepson and go like that. And then they even talk about when editors leave and get fired. All the back matter and intros of these books are hilarious. Mm-hmm. They also have recommended music listening, which is great for each issue. They stop for a while and then come back, but those are always great. And they're David's picks of what music to listen to. I think they're probably what he was listening to when he was drawing the issues. And then he puts them in the back for us to listen to, which is really nice. Yes.
So good.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, this series is fucking kick-ass in so many regards.
How he gets his car in the beginning. I mean, there's just so much to talk about in every issue. It's so different. I mean, like you said, it really changed how everything was being done. I'm trying to remember some of those books now. What were some of the ones that really stuck out to you that were just aping on this?
So we had like, what we have? We had that Secret Avengers run that was caught... And
that was Alice Cobb. Yeah.
His had a real similar visual style and kind of that real loose goofiness. Superior Foes of Spider-Man, huge. I think Spencer took this model and really applied it. Because that and his work on The Fix felt like Hawkeye, like they were descendants of Hawkeye, like the way that we are of cavemen. Hawkeye would be cavemen to what those the Superior Foes and that would be. And then I'm trying to think of what the others that just felt like there were so many that probably weren't as good, but yeah.
Definitely. There was definitely DC books too.
Oh yeah.
I remember a lot of people changing up to this style.
Let's see what else.
I really like, so there. The Lucky issue is great too. After Grylls dies, which this is all about our time jumping, we get Lucky becomes a detective, and you see everything through Lucky's nose, basically the people he smells, and he becomes like a little detective. And then we see Kate leave, and then actually issues later, we actually get to see the funeral that they go to for Grylls, and then we get to see why Kate and Clint get in an argument, but we see it first through all of Lucky's eyes. And then we have our spinoff, which is Kate in L.A., and then the series basically becomes two books. And as a person that lived in L.A., there was a lot of inner L.A. jokes there, which I think Matt... So Matt Fraction is from Illinois originally, grew up in Illinois. He now lives in Portland with his wife, Kelly Sue DeConnick, or outside of Portland, I should say, with their children. So I do think he was raised in the East Coast, but then moved to the West Coast. But I do have a feeling he lived in L.A. for quite some time when he was beginning to become a writer, or maybe when he wanted to be a screenwriter, because... As someone that moved to L.A. and had new L.A. vibes, this book is very much what it's like when you move to L.A. You meet random neighbors. You go to secret parties in places called Area 51 that you talk about. At like Moon Tribe. A lot of like inner jokes that you would get from. And then all of his L.A. stuff. Me, I'm a huge Beach Boys fan. One of my favorite issues here is when he clearly talks about Brian Wilson's concept album Smile, which took forever to come out. But in this universe, it's Will Bryson, and his concept album is called Wish. And then Dennis Wilson, who did eventually die of cancer, is basically, was it Gene Bryson, I think, is the name of the character in this? That Gene is trying to keep Wish from coming out. Or no, he's trying to release Wish, and then Bryson himself is not letting it come out. Which is funny that stuff actually did happen, where one of the Wilson brothers did eventually die of cancer, and then Smile was actually released, so... It's funny to see Matt being a huge, I would guess, I'm a huge Beach Boys fan, being a Beach Boys fan and Brian Wilson fan. Brian Wilson and me share birthdays. Not the same year, obviously, but same day. Got to get weird with Brian, but I enjoyed that. You pointed out, she has a detective that we think is her spirit guide. We think he's fake originally, but he ends up being real. He's cat food guy, and then you find out his name is Harold H. Harold. I thought the entire time that he was a riff on Columbo because of his jacket.
Demeanor.
But you think it's Elliot Gould.
I do. I think it's Elliot Gould from, what is it, the Long Goodbye? or what's the one that he's in? I think it's Elliot Gould is Philip Marlowe, basically. Where is it?
It looks more like Elliot Gould. I'll give you that. The first thing I thought was a Long Goodbye.
Yeah,
right.
So the Long Goodbye. And I really thought that because the first instance we get to see him, she's trying to find cat food, a particular brand of cat food, because that's all her cattle eat. And that's the same problem that Marlowe's got at the beginning of the Long Goodbye. He's got to get this cat food because otherwise his cat won't eat. Just won't. If it sees the wrong can, not going to eat it. And has a similar interaction, actually, between the two of them as Marlowe does with the store attendant. Which The Long Goodbye is a pretty goddamn good movie, too. And then looking at the character again, I think after you see like a picture of Marlowe, like
I've
Elliot
looked it
Gould
up, they look exactly
oh, yeah,
alike. Yeah. I have to see The Long Goodbye now. I feel like as on my crime kick I'm recently on, I feel like it's sacrilege. I haven't seen this movie. It sounds amazing.
Oh man, yeah, it's great.
He quotes Chinatown at the end. Was it? It's not. Forget it, baby. It's metaphor.
Yep.
Instead of forget it, baby, it's Chinatown. But all those Avengers are great. Annie Wu does a great job of art, making it very fun. And it really starts off the kind of battle Kate has with Madame Mask that lasts literally years.
Yeah.
Up until her own Hawkeye run, which I also enjoyed that Kelly Thompson did. She then kind of spun it into West Coast Avengers. See, all of this is all spawned from this series. Even West Coast Avengers wouldn't have existed without this book.
Yep. Insanity.
I'm surprised that book hasn't got a... I mean, that was a book that didn't sell well, but people were crazy about it online, but I'm surprised they haven't got another kick at it. I really enjoyed that
book. I did too.
Quite a lot.
Got Jeff the Land Shark, all that good stuff. I really enjoyed that they alternate near the end, that we get a Clint story and we get a Kate story every other issue they're so the same, but they're so different. Like,
yes.
They're very much... the people who are going to be like self-destructive kind of and like really like fight tooth and nail for what they think is right. But like there's something about Kate that's so much more optimistic, so much more like positive. And then, yeah, then you get Clint who's I would say a little bit more worldly, maybe like more. I don't want to say pessimistic, but understanding, realist, maybe.
Yeah, I would call him a realist for sure. Kate's optimism always, you know, it's really sweet because she's literally hit by curveball after curveball the whole time she's in L.A. and still stays plucky and fun. And I love her. I mean, everything about her run, how it contrasts with Clint is great. I love her gay neighbors that starts off her first case trying to find the orchids for them. Like, it gets her a good sidekick story to that, which is similar to the sidekicks Clint has at the apartments. And it's just, it's really fun switching back and forth. I mean, that really made the end of this run easy to read for me because I was so invested in both worlds, invested in Clint and the apartment building and then invested in Kate and her basically investigation in L.A. and all these places it's taking her because I was really like a whack. They're both comedies, but I would say Clint's story is like a gritty crime comedy where Kate's is more of a wacky comedy with elements of death and murder.
I think almost in a sense Clint's is more like the kind of comedy where you gotta laugh because otherwise it's too dark, you know? Like,
yeah,
it's like a gallows humor more so in Clint's story, whereas Kate's is like, I'm still fun. It's fun with crime instead of crime with fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, fun with crime, and I would say like West Coast Avengers in the other series borrow more from that element of story.
Yeah.
Like, West Coast Avengers is definitely more fun with crime than crime with fun.
West Coast Avengers has a character called Brodok, who's a bio-robotic organism designed only for kissing. And that is the single best thing added to Marvel canon in the last 15 years. Easy.
Yes, he literally looks like a young Fabio.
With a giant MODOK head. Yeah.
Yeah.
But cut abs, so it's okay.
Yeah, and then a giant tiger, too, right in the beginning that gets in a fight. That was just such a good use of Novar 2 and Kid Omega, mm-hmm. which we're getting them again now, luckily, through the new X launch and also through Al's really good Guardians of the Galaxy run. I'm glad Novar, you know, is getting to good use again. A Grant Morrison creation is getting out there because that's a great series that's really out there and old.
I think the coolest thing, too, about Kate's character is that it's consistent across every iteration. Like, yeah. She is just as cool, calm, and collected, confident in this book as she is in Young Avengers, in the Gillen and McKelvey Young Avengers, in West Coast Avengers, in her own run.
Avengers,
like,
yeah.
There's certain characters that I sometimes feel like a new writer will come on and it'll be night and day. It won't feel the same. It'll serve whatever story they're telling, but it doesn't feel right.
That happens a lot with just Clint Barton.
Yeah, 100%.
I would say Lemire's take on Barton is, I mean, some of it's the same, especially in the first half, but that second half,
it's tough.
It's not the same. It was a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
Like, this is just way too tough an act to follow. I feel like anyone would have been pretty cursed with following
this
run.
I don't think I'd read it again after having read this run, but
no, I do want to
give it another try outside of this run, because
once I give this run more space, I'm going to try to read it again because it's too hard to read right after.
Yeah, it's right in the rear view. Like, we're looking at it's like driving away from an ex-girlfriend. You know what I mean? I don't want to. I can't look back at something that was good at one point. I got to drive on to something new, but I can't.
And you're trying to look at something new, too, when you're driving back your ex-girlfriend, just comparing it to that, too. And
I don't want that.
You know, say, you got to get it fresh, completely out of your mind. Rosenberg's run is a good take on it, and it does seem the most natural like this, even though not trying to completely ape on it. Yeah. It's just about Clint being fun, getting into shit, and dealing with tragedy, which you recommended it, and I thoroughly enjoyed that whole run. It was a lot of fun.
Glad. That's the power of Fraction, man. Turn you back on to the big two. No, I'm just kidding.
What did he do directly after this? Because I know that he left because now for me, it's, especially after 2012, just was into 2015 when this book ended. I mean, I was doing a lot in my life, and I was really literally only reading comics digitally. So I'm trying to remember what.
So let's see.
I remember reading the Lemire run right afterwards, but I know Fraction did Sex Criminals. That might be what he did directly after this, actually, which would make sense because that's the book we're talking about next. But I don't think he did anything for Marvel and DC for quite a while after this, at least from what I remember.
So I was thinking it might be good. We've probably covered inadvertently a lot of plot points and talked about what we really love about this comic and a lot of things we love about Matt Fraction. Since Michael read all the way through the series, I thought it'd be nice if you gave us a 5-second explanation of each arc as quickly as possible.
Well, hold on. Chaz is looking up something right now.
I can do this.
Got it?
Here we go. Hawkeye shoots arrows. Kate goes west. Hawkeye shoots more arrows with his brother, who also shoots arrows. Draculas come, and they get shot by arrows, and they fire guns. The residents learn all to stand up. Also, Clint's been watching cowboy movies the whole time, so the end sort of really mirrors something like... actually, the last arc's called Rio Bravo, so it's basically just Rio Bravo, the movie, but instead it has archers and tracksuit Draculas.
Only thing I'd add in that is... only thing I'll add in that, too, is real quick, Clint also likes a car, has sex with a redhead real quick, she gets him deeper involved with the mafia.
Excellent.
His ex-girlfriends and ex-wife also get mad at him. Everything else, it just continues with what Chaz just said.
He has several real bad days that get him way more and more involved.
Thor after
we get to see a really interesting arc where
Thor?
Possibly learn some dark...
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I thought it was interesting when they talked about some dark things the Avengers did, and then right at the end they did a psych out like, oh, nope, the Avengers don't kill people. And in my headcanon, that was them trying to trick Kate into thinking that they don't kill people. Because I like to think that the Avengers do kill the bad guys.
No, Avengers don't kill people.
I know, but it's first off,
it's tough to believe when they shoot arrows.
And second off, it just makes these guys come
back. It's tough to believe because arrows kill people.
Exactly.
But not unless you have full, like, stun arrows and stick arrows.
Thor hitting people with a hammer.
USB arrows.
I had it backwards. It looks like he started Thor prior to this one.
He did Fantastic Four, I think, during and a little bit after this, right? Because he took over after
Hickman. Did do Fantastic Four in 2013 was when he jumped
on
that.
So, in the middle of this.
And then it looks like, Future Foundation was 2012 through 2013, same with Fantastic Four. Thor was 2010 to 2012. Iron Man, 2008-2012. And X-Men,
so I think he just jumped to Sex Criminals.
2008 to 2011.
So I think it was just Sex Criminals after this. This was his kind of last
Sex Criminals, Casanova,
last Marvel book.
What was the other one that he had done? Satellite Sam. Yeah, mostly
Satellite
indie stuff.
Sam, the book Brian would not let me purchase at your store because he said he didn't think I was going to like
it. It's one of those ones that I really want to read, but I have a hard time with Howard Chaykin. You know what I mean? There's just something about the art. But the idea of the story sounded good. I just couldn't. I don't know.
Is it like a concept albums with it too, right? Or something like that?
No, that's Solid State. That one's good.
Oh, yeah. Solid State was the one. Yeah. No, that was the one Brian told me not to read.
That one you should.
I'm getting it mixed up.
The Satellite Sam one makes sense because I just don't know how you feel about Howard Chaykin. But
yeah,
I'm mixed. I don't know. I bet it's good.
Real quick, since we've gone over the plot, how much of this do you guys, because it's coming out in November, how much of this do you guys think is going to actually tie into the... First off, I do want to once again say, this is so much better than having a family and a farm. As me, a Clint Barton fan, it broke my heart that Joss Whedon's only thing he could do with Hawkeye, instead of making him a guy that clearly would never get married and have a family and be a never-do-well, kind of resilient bastard, he makes him a family man on a farm. I mean, we all know Joss Whedon isn't a good person for many reasons, but Joss Whedon, he broke my heart when he did that, because he was like, this is the only way I can make Hawkeye interesting, which sucks. It sucks that now we have to deal with it. It is cool seeing him be a dad and seeing his reaction in Endgame and stuff, but it is not the Clint Barton I'm used to. It is clearly a different character.
Yeah, 100%. It bummed me out.
Yep.
Bummed me out as well. So, wish
we can
list,
all agree on
like,
that.
If I could... How much do I think they're going to pull from this? Ideally, 100%. Realistically, 40%.
40. I think they're going to put them in an apartment building, right? I mean, the pictures that have been released look like they're in an apartment building.
So he's just given up on his wife? He's given up on Linda Cardellini?
I cannot believe. I think what it's going to be, I'm going to make a guess here.
Maybe she dies.
No, I'm going to make a guess because I've seen Black Widow. Is that Yelena is after him, and to protect his family, because Yelena's trying to kill him, he moves to an apartment in New York.
Okay.
Where he meets Kate Bishop. And then they form a relationship.
I would love to see him go John Wick and make it real dark, but I highly doubt it.
That would be the Ronin movie we never got.
The books seem to be a lot darker than the shows.
Yeah, it would also be great. He did get him a little bit as Ronin in that. But I think that's what's going to happen, because we know Yelena is targeting him. And so I think maybe he'll take a fake identity and go to New York, and he'll live in an apartment building and try to act like a regular Joe. He runs into Kate Bishop, who he can then teach how to be an archer, and she can kind of do the Hawkeye stuff while he's hiding undercover. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it'll lead to him and Kate battling Yelena. Yelena finds out he's good. And then maybe with some rumors, Bullseye's going to be in this series, which would only, I guess, help the Dark Avengers rumor, which I could see Bullseye being a formidable villain.
Dark Avengers is
going to
be
I'm here for it,
sick.
Man. I'm super excited about Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
People are really saying that. People seem to be pretty convinced, not just weird rumor guy, that Vincent D'Onofrio and Wilson Bethel, who played Bullseye, are both in this Hawkeye series, which I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
Because so, Kingpin is in the comic, so...
I want to dope
the last Wolverine was rated... The last Wolverine was rated R. Are we going to get more rated R X-Men? Or
No, not from Marvel. Yeah. No, I can't believe we're going to get a rated R. You have to understand, Jack, that was when 20th Century Fox was controlling this. Marvel has got the rights
back. I understand. That's why I doubted it.
I don't...
But it would be cool as fuck if we
also
got rated R X-Men.
It's a hot
rated
take,
R anything.
But I did not care for Logan.
Whoa, this is the hottest take. Whoa.
I was warm on it. I wasn't hot on it.
I love that movie, but I haven't seen it since 2017.
It was great.
So my observations on that film are from 4 years ago. I have not seen it since, which maybe says something about the movie. I did want to watch it again recently, but it's not streaming anymore for free, and I'm definitely not going to pay for it. So,
yeah. It was just slow and like didn't feel as relevant to like the rest of everything going on with X-Men and the other movies.
Well, the problem with the X-Men series and the 20th Century Fox universe is clearly all the continuity was terribly fucked up and they didn't care.
Because
do you guys remember
the perfect comic book universe? They do whatever and then they say, well, if you don't like it, that's actually a different universe.
The original X-Men trilogy was fucking epic, not gonna lie.
Yeah. But do you guys remember the end of The Wolverine? the first James Mangold movie where Wolverine's fucking adamantium claws get ripped off by the Silver Samurai.
Yep.
He's got bone claws, so now he can go through he still clicks at airport security. Yeah. And he's going through airport security, and the airport gets frozen, and literally Professor X and Magneto roll up to him in the middle of fucking the Japanese airport and are like, "We need you. There's something happening." And then it does like a ad for X-Men Days of Future Past. And then when X-Men Days of Future Past really comes out, it's clearly a different fucking timeline. And Wolverine has fucking adamantium claws again. And he's much older.
They explain that. He's got to go back in time to fix it so they get back to the part where he was at the Wolverine.
What? No, but when did they encounter him at the airport?
That would have been prior to when they go to do that.
No, dude. None of it makes any sense.
They would be alive for forever because of their mutant power somehow.
I've still yet to see the rogue cut of X-Men Days of Future Past.
I heard it's got all those 10 extra minutes of rogue.
Okay.
10 extra. So a lot of this, you know that Anna Paquin face where she's just looking at stuff? Yeah. It's that for 10 minutes.
Just like Spider-Man's, well, the new Spider-Man's really good, but just like Spider-Man, the first X-Men trilogy was way better than the second
one. The third one sucks, dude. X-Men Last Stand's horrible, man.
What? You can't base it off X-Men, one movie.
X-Men I know, 1 but is pretty rough, too, a little bit, though.
We're way better.
X-Men 1 is rough. Days of Future Past and First Class are good movies.
Yeah. They're good.
Yeah. X-Men 1.
Maybe it's just X-Men a pure 1 nostalgia is, and me having seen the original series X-Men so many times. X-Men 1's
pretty rough, too. They had that toad line with Storm.
X-Men 2, that's real bad.
Fantastic movie. X-Men 2 is great.
X-Men 3.
X-Men 3.
Garbage. 3 is where they the fuck first up. Two. 3 seems to be the big issue.
3 always is bad, no matter what.
I will say this.
Marvel.
100%. They made the best lemons out of lemonade by trying to combine the two universes they had started in the, ultimate fucking fanboy way of, your favorite things together in one. We got old Professor X here. We got young Professor X there. You know? It's just...
Yeah, that trailer fucking still rocks. That shit will give me goosebumps, the first trailer, where it's, old Patrick Stewart trying to communicate to young Patrick Stewart, and they're talking to each other while it's showing scenes of the movie. That fucking trailer, while it's playing Journey to the Line by Hans Zimmer from Thin Red Line, that trailer's incredible. Right. That trailer itself should get
it's super duper comic-y, is all I'm saying. It feels, it felt like they took an event comic and said, let's do it.
Yeah, it's an X-Men fan's wet dream. Literally, that trailer was just yes! But then they fucked everything up afterwards, except Logan to some degree. Dark Phoenix is fucking horrible. They have the dreadlock villain, which got me the most retweets I've ever had on Twitter, is me talking about how this guy's powers were that he shook his dreadlocks. That's a literal character in that movie. He's one of Magneto's acolytes, and he goes, and shakes his dreadlocks at Sentinels. I'm just like, what power is that? What?
Logan, I just didn't care for the GMO subplot. That felt a little heavy-handed and ham-fisted. Just didn't make any goddamn sense.
Richard E. Grant, also in Logan. Yeah. Knocking on there as the GMO master.
Secretly getting rid of mutants by weaponizing corn syrup. It's in everything, man.
So you might as well get vaccinated because you're eating it in your food. Yep. Hawkeye. It's great. It's the best interpretation of this character we've got so far. It's one of my favorite books we've covered on this so far. My favorite Marvel book we've covered so far.
Fucking excellent.
My favorite Marvel book, hands down, that we've covered so far. I mean, we're going to cover more Marvel books in the future that I really like, but of the books, Marvel books we've talked about.
It was at least
top tier.
With Winter Soldier.
Yeah, Winter Soldier is a great book too, but this is through the wall enjoyable for me.
Yeah, be better.
Well, I mean, I just feel enjoyment level. This is just a fucking experience I could rush through every time. Exactly. And then I'm kind of sad that I ended. Every time I get to issue 22, I think there are going to be 24 issues, and I realize I'm at the last issue at 22, and I'm like, God damn it!
I always feel like I said, I never realize how long an issue really is, because even if I read it fast, it doesn't feel like I read it fast. Like, there's so much happening in every page.
Yes. I mean, so there's good. Like a little universal story in each story, each page. Each story when it's done, whether it's the car story, whether it's the circus story, whether it's the ex-girlfriend's
Man,
Valentine's Day
story,
which goes through a few
choice.
Issues.
Boomerang
yeah,
arrows.
I love that he keeps on saying just a sex, and then he goes sec, because he's always just randomly having sex with people.
Why do you need a boomerang arrow? Because it comes back, because boomerangs. But why?
And then it comes back.
And then it literally comes back.
I love that.
Chekhov's arrow.
That's the kind of humor that reminds me so much of Archer.
Arrow.
Dude, so meta. Yeah, there's tons of meta humor in it.
We're now venturing into the later part of Fraction's career, which Jack finally gets to read Sex Criminals next week. And then we're going to do the very similar, up to this, Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, which we're going to bring on Jack's brother, Alex, to come back and expose him to the nice world of Matt Fraction and also Jimmy Olsen. He's going to realize how cool Jimmy Olsen is.
Yeah. See if we can convert him from purely manga to
this
manga
could be the one.
Let's do it. And then we have Aditya coming back for November, which is the most serious of all these books and probably Matt's best book, in my opinion. Three Women in Trouble, One Night in November. What's going to happen?
It's like Magnolia.
Fucking awesome.
By way of Criminal. It's the Paul Thomas Anderson movie Magnolia, if it was a part of the Criminal universe.
If Martin Scorsese directed Magnolia.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, close to that.
Yeah.
So good.
Anything you've read recently, Chaz, that you really were...
Through the moon about?
Really overjoyed about?
So, let's see. I'm still chipping my way through Ice Cream Man. Not always giving me the same vibe as Ha Ha, which I'm pretty certain is going to be my number one. That fifth issue is going to be my number one issue of the year. I didn't have a chance to put up new books
23 through 25,
yet.
Man.
But I can't wait to read Once in Future. That dropped this week, and it's been so choice.
Echolands was great.
And then I grabbed Censor, the new Junji Ito manga. And that thing's been
nice.
Gnarly. I got to read it in spurts. I don't want to freak myself out.
Junji Ito is always good for that. I have to check that out as well. He's such a nice old man.
There's a digital sale on Viz too for Fire Punch, so I grabbed two volumes of that because Chainsaw Man fucking rules. So I wanted to check out Fire Punch, and I read the first chapter and was like, this is so depressing and dark, I cannot wait to read more.
Nice. I didn't know where you were going with that.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe it'll get a little lighter, but if not, it'll be just a something.
Punching the gut.
This week I read quite a few things. Department of Truth, solid as always. Chaz, your suspicions about Hawk were not exactly right, but there's definitely something up with Hawk, which was revealed this issue. You're caught up?
I read a preview of that one a couple weeks back.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm really excited to see how this new arc ends. And excited for Matt Brown, my friend who listens to the show. He's read the first volume now because of us, for him to get introduced to Hawk in the second volume when it comes out for trade.
The Hawk guy?
I went on a Ice Cream Man kick because the 25th issue came out, and I caught up. I was read up to 22, and I read 23, 25, which I was telling Chaz, they're amazing. They're the best the book's been since the beginning. Probably the best three issues since issue 4. I believe that's the issue where it's the ambulance.
Oh, that's
and,
8?
Everything.
Yeah, because that's 8? The one with Hank, the happy clown, who's the last... He's the
that
final
is
character.
Okay, so it's the best since issue 8, and also it connects back with issue 8. So, I mean... You start to see things again from the beginning of the series from issue 8, and it really touches in kind of like existential dread, why we exist, how little we really mean to the universe, and how much we worry, and just does some Grant Morrison stuff, does what you, Chaz, talk about all the time.
Why worry when we could just enjoy the little time we got?
Yeah, well, no, they literally do a point where Chaz talks about all the time where they say, if you turn this page, you're going to kill this guy and you're going to kill this puppy. So if you do that, you're the one responsible. Mm-hmm. And I had to turn the page because I want to see the story finish. So I'm a murderer. And then I went on a big That Texas Blood kick by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. I've been really enjoying that. I've been on a crime kick in the Newark. I've been really enjoying as a Kolchak. I don't know if people, listeners, know who Kolchak the Night Stalker is. I'm really dating myself right now. But Kolchak the Night Stalker was a old character that investigated supernatural crimes. He kind of inspired the X-Files. I only know who he is because of my father. And then they did do a 2000s reboot with a dude that was going to be Aragorn, but then didn't become Aragorn because he got fired for being a drunk and falling off horses. I forget his name. But he played him in 2000s. There was a 2000s Night Stalker reboot. So anyway, this is flashes back to 1981, and you're with Joe Bob investigating a cult with this PI named Eversol, who's clearly based on Night Stalker. And it's just so good, and it had me reread and get the trade for the first That Texas Blood arc, which I absolutely love. It's literally Ed Brubaker meets the Coen brothers. It's such a dark, dark Beautiful. View of Texas and a dark view of human souls, where Joe Bob, the sheriff, is kind of the one bright character, him and his wife and his deputy, surrounded by all these dark characters in death. And it's absolutely wonderful. And got to give it to Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips for making this book. I'm really excited for Jacob Phillips' next book, New Burn, with Chip Zdarsky, which comes out in November. And I'm really excited about crime books. I'm on a crime and horror kick. But that's also a real shout, real quick, besides the crime and horror kick I'm on, is I did love Echolands by J.H. Williams and by W.D. Blackman and Dave Stewart. It was a lot of fun and really rich fantasy world with some great back matter in the first issue. And it's done the sidewise kind of widescreen presentation. But all those books are great. Can't wait for New Burn. Can't wait for What's the Furthest Place from Here. Also reread Four Kids Walk Into a Bank recently, and God, that's one of the best books of
you
the last 5 years.
You should check out Dead Dog's Bite. It's all Tyler Boss.
I have it pre-ordered.
Okay, good.
I have it pre-ordered.
It's good.
It's coming to me September 28th. Did you finish it already?
Yeah, there's only four, but it's awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. I think I'm getting it September 28th. I pre-ordered it on Amazon like whenever it came out originally, and I missed the first two issues. Yeah, I love Tyler Boss. But that's all I have of new stuff. Probably check out Dead Dog's Bite. I'll be talking about it more at the end of next month when I get it.
Yeah.
All right, we're at about an hour and a half, and I have to start getting ready for the live stream I'm doing tonight.
Yeah, I think we're set. I think we just do the outro. Friends.
Plug your album, dog.
Yeah, let's... Well, you guys all go first, and then...
So we got Sex Criminals coming up next, you guys. And then once we finish with Matt Fraction, we're going to do a double feature because October is the month of Alex Pacnadel and Dan Waters. They're both coming on the show. We have an Alex back again, which I'm really excited for. He's probably
he's
one of the funniest guys I've talked to. I'm really excited and nervous to talk to Dan. But we're going to do a 4-episode quick miniseries before Halloween. We're going to cover 2 of their books each issue and just talk about the white each episode. I keep calling their episodes issues, whatever, same thing. Every episode we're going to cover 2 of their books. I just released a little ad for it. We're going to cover Arcadia, Assassin's Creed, Limbo, Turncoat, Red Fork, Lucifer, Giga, Homesick Pilots, but we're going to do them together as like an old school double feature. We'll probably get to talk about the books a little bit less, but we'll talk about our favorite things about those books, and we'll kind of talk about the relevant themes they have. Really excited to have those guys back. Really excited to talk about Department on Truth on Halloween and then do our 2-parter episode with Pink Buzz. And then eventually we are getting into Rick Remender, where we will have other podcast hosts come on and join us for the first time, which will be also fun and I'm also nervous about. But that's all for me this week that I have. As always, I am Poet Air. You can find me on Twitter at PoetAir33. You can find the show at Outside The with a 0. And then where can they find you guys?
You can find me on Twitter and most other social media as well at Chaz Simons.
You can find me on Twitter at @sin_aesthetics with an X. You can also find me on Instagram at @sin_aesthetic.
And I just got to say, Jeremy Renner has done a really poor job of playing a deaf person. Chaz?
Turn the page. Wash your hands.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening to tonight's episode. This is Sin Aesthetic. You can find my new album, Feral Kid, on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, SoundCloud, pretty much anywhere you can listen to music. Now here's my track, Opalescence. Enjoy.